Welcome to episode 93 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Today I'm going to illustrate a bit of a drama as it unfolded as a Japanese green woodpecker fledgling dices with death at the hands of a snake, although snakes don't have hands. And then is coaxed out of the nest by his mother. I visited Jindai Shokubutsu Koen, which is, I guess that would translate as the Jindai Botanical Garden or Park, on both the 16th and the 23rd of June 2007. I'm not going to go into detail about the first visit today, although you can see the photos online. I really wanted to go into detail on the second visit and concentrate on talking about the shots that I made on the 23rd of June 2007. The park is located in the Chōfu city, about an hour's crawl through the traffic from my Tokyo apartment. This is one of the few places in the city itself that is actually easier to get to by car than it is by train. On my first visit, I was really there to shoot the flowers, and I'll put a link into the show notes that will allow you to view all of the shots from both visits, as well as, you know, so what it will actually be is just a link to the park name. So if I go back and add any other you know, photos at a later date, then they'll also be in that link. But right now, there's about 24 shots from this these 2 days. The reason that I went back in just a week after my first visit is because while I was shooting the flowers, my other half, who was sort of killing time while waiting for me shooting, walked down a little bit further down the path that I was stopped by, and she noticed a huge sort of white lens gang pointing their lenses up at a tree. On asking a gentleman that was sitting patiently with his 500mm f4 trained on the tree what they were doing, she heard that there was a pair of Japanese green woodpeckers taking turns sitting on their eggs. She came back and excited and told me, and having finished shooting the lily that I was shooting in a brook, up at the side of the path, I walked the 50 paces or so further along to the where the crowd was all sort of sitting with their lenses and cameras trained on the tree. I also asked some details of another gentleman that was only too keen to chat about the birds, and heard that one of the parents would fly back to the nest around every 2 hours or so. I decided to hang around for a while, but the longest lens that I had in my bag was the 100 to 400 millimeter L lens, which, although is a great lens, it was not really going to get me close enough from where I'd need to shoot from with all of the others already in position. Still, I set up where I could and trained my lens on the on the hole in the tree trunk, and waited for an hour or so. One of the woodpeckers was due to come back from what I'd heard, but it didn't happen. Neither showed, so I decided that as the park was close to closing time, that I'd call it a day. I thought that I'd come back maybe the following day, and it turned out that I couldn't make it. I couldn't make the time, so I decided to go back the following weekend. And I actually thinking that if the birds were still sitting on the eggs, then I might even leave it until the Sunday, the 24th, or even the following weekend. But I woke up relatively early on Saturday, the 23rd, the morning, and I thought that it would be worth trying my luck. So I loaded up my 16mm f4 and a few other lenses and headed out. It was around 10 a.m. when I'd fought my way through the traffic, but I wasn't really rushing as the park doesn't even open until 9:30 a.m. anyway. The only problem was that I knew that the white lens gang that I intended to join for the day would already be out in force. I was not disappointed. As I got closer, I could see that there were now even more people set up with their lenses than the previous week. The gentleman that I'd spoken to on that previous week, he'd recognised me as I was walking up and bowed his head, and sort of as I approached, he told me that the chicks had hatched. This was pretty cool, as it meant that the parents would be, now they would be out together catching food for the chicks and would come back to the nest much more often. I set up my camera in a location towards the back of the crowd, but between some others. This gave me a nice angle at the, to shoot at the nest, the hole that the woodpecker had pecked his way into the tree, and it was going to be a good angle for the sort of for me to shoot the chicks as they peeped out, and was also far back enough to allow me to shoot the scene almost horizontally. Obviously I'm looking up, but the further away you can get from the tree, the shallower the angle gets, so you get a better angle, almost horizontal to the tree. And I did have to use my 1.4 times extender with the 600mm f4 lens, so I was shooting at 840mm to get the birds a reasonable size in the frame. And even then, I cropped the final images to the tune of about 15%. Along one side and the bottom. One guy said to me at some point in the morning that I didn't need to bother with such a large lens as an extender, as I could just crop out the important part of a larger image. And I just said that this would result in throwing away too many pixels to be able to make a decent sized print, and ended the conversation. I didn't really want to get into a conversation about this. I wanted to go on and say that I wanted to be able to do more with my images than print them out at A4 size or smaller, just to show them off in the park on days exactly like this. I enjoyed the socializing of this sort of impromptu gathering, and became friendly with a couple of guys on this day, but the main objective is to shoot the birds, not to show off a little album of greatest hits. And I don't carry one, of course, apart from a copy of my portfolio on my Epson portable storage. But the last thing that I want to do is to be worrying about where my portable storage is while I'm trying to photograph wildlife. I did enjoy taking a look at a few of the albums from the two people that I became quite friendly with. But, some people make this their main objective. And I don't know if this happens in other countries, but, I find it such a waste to be able to shoot subjects like this in such a sort of beautiful surroundings, and then to really just spend most of the day just walking around seeing who you can strike up a conversation with, so that the next thing you can do is run back to your camera bag and get your little album out and go and show them, show off all of your pictures. Before I go on any more sort of rambling about that, it was not long after I'd been set up before one of the fledglings stuck his head out of the hole in the tree trunk and started to get some shots. Around 40 minutes after I got there, one of the parents came back and fed the fledgling for about 20 seconds, maybe 30 seconds or so, and then flew away again. We're not going to look at any shots from this first batch, as I got some better ones later. First today, let's look at image number 1479, which was shot not long after the parent had just flown away after the first visit, and one of the fledglings was peeping out of the hole, seemingly looking upwards for the parent. Not a particularly great shot, but when viewed large, for some reason the markings around the eyes of this fledgling look like it has like large upper eyelashes. We can also see now what kind of conditions I was shooting in. The tree trunk itself was in shade, yet the background was very brightly lit, with the fresh green leaves there of the nearby trees really sort of bright in the background. I'd chosen this spot because there were no overhanging branches in these other trees in the background to make like dark lines that would have kind of broken up that beautiful green bokeh that we can see to the right of the tree trunk. Of course, I'd switched to manual mode and set the exposure myself. For much of the time, I was stopped down just one third of a stop from f5.6, which is the widest aperture of the 600mm f4 lens, after adding the 1.4 times extender, which cost me one stop. So I was shooting at f 6.3 for much of the time, just to give me a slightly more depth of field than wide open would. I didn't want to go much smaller, as I didn't want the green bokeh to start to come into focus much more. But also, I was having to work with quite slow shutter speeds. Even at ISO 400, I had to use a shutter speed of 1/30th of a second at f6.3, and this was really already too slow for shooting birds. As birds tend to make very sharp, jerky movements, I knew that the, you know, by selecting this shutter speed, that I was going to be committing to at least half of my shots being sort of pretty much totally useless, possibly more than that. You can see in this shot that, even more in some of the other shots that today that we'll look at, that some of the background is overexposed. I'm not worried about this at this level, as I'd much rather get those nice vibrant greens for the most part and just let the highlights go their own way. I'm obviously much more interested in getting the shadow areas of the tree properly exposed in this situation. So really, I'm just checking my histogram, ignoring any overexposure, which is the mountains clipping on the right side there of the histogram, and really concentrating on keeping from clipping any more than the darkest shadows to the left of the histogram. I found that the exposure indicator or carrot in the viewfinder was around plus 2/3 of a stop over zero when I aligned the center of the lens with the right line of the tree there, the tree trunk, so that the frame was half tree and half highlights. Of course, if I moved to fill the whole frame with highlights, I was showing way overexposed, more than two stops. And if I put the tree trunk in the center of the frame with just a tiny amount of the highlights showing either side of it, I was seeing that my exposure was around minus one. It's exactly this sort of shift, though, that makes me want to shoot in manual mode under these conditions. I don't want to be locked into having to keep the line of the tree in the center of the frame, which is what I'd have to do if I was in aperture priority mode, with plus 2/3 of stop exposure compensation. This is, of course, what I'd have to do, or anything I shot with more highlights in the frame would throw the tree trunk and the birds into shadow, and if I filled the frame with too much tree trunk, then not only would the highlights become more blown out, I'd also start to overexpose my main subject. Anyway, I'd been hanging around shooting the fat with a few of, some of the others in the area, and occasionally shooting the fledgling that stuck his head out of the hole in the tree. When my other half said, "What's that?" and I was a little bit shocked and looked up, and I put my eye to the viewfinder and noticed some sort of kind of a thin, wiggly thing, sort of going into the hole, and I wondered for a moment what it was, and then one of the fledglings flew out of the nest and flew and sort of landed on the ground 7 meters or 20 feet or so away from the tree. Someone said that it was a snake that had gone into the nest, and everyone crowded around the fledgling on the floor, sort of keeping the distance, but so as to not surprise it. And it kind of jumped through a gap in a picket fence and hid under a hydrangea bush in the stream, by the stream in the park there. There was a little bit of panic. Someone called the rangers, this isn't part of the panic, obviously, someone else got a big stick and started to beat the tree trunk to scare the snake out. And I'm not sure if that was the right thing to do. You know, the snake has to eat as well. But the little bit of a panic in the area as this whole sort of scene developed. And, you know, the snake didn't come out, and the ranger turned up with a blanket and a large net, like one of those butterfly catching net things, caught the bird and took it away to captivity. Apparently it was taken to a park nearby where they could do something with it. Quite some time later, though, when everyone was sure that the snake had either eaten or at least killed one of the or one or both of the fledglings that we believe will have remained in the nest, the snake slowly started to sort of stick its head out of the hole. I have uploaded three shots from this point, but let's look at first at 1481, which is a shot that we can see the snake. So he just stuck his head out and he's yawning there, seemingly contented with a full stomach. The settings for this shot and the next were exactly the same as the last one, so I'm not going to go into the technical details, but rather concentrate on telling the story. Not being a snake expert, but having a bad tendency to personify all living creatures, I felt really sure on seeing this yawn that that he'd eaten one of the chicks and was really that just contented. I'm sure it's a big enough snake to have eaten one of these fledglings, and it had probably had long enough to do so. However, I kept my eyes trained on the snake as he left the nest, not only to photograph it, but also to see if there were any large bumps along its length. And we can see the snake making its way out of the nest in image 1482, but I was happy to see as I watched the whole thing emerge that there were no bumps. The snake had not eaten any of the two remaining fledglings. It was shortly after noon when the snake left the nest, and the air was pretty tense for a while as the parents could be heard calling in the nearby tree, obviously aware of what had happened but not able to do anything about it. And it had been around 20 or 30 minutes since the snake left when we finally saw one of the fledglings stick its head out of the nest. There was a gasp of relief and a number of definite shouts of joy from people around the nest, and I can't remember if this really happened, but probably for fear of startling the birds, but I think that there was even a small round of applause, and if there wasn't an audible one, there was definitely one inside of all of the people that were sort of joined together in support for the remaining fledglings. At least now, though, we knew that one of them was still alive. In the next shot, number 1485, we can see that the mother had returned to the nest. I actually got a shot of the mother passing food to the young, but it was a little too soft for my liking due to the movement of the heads of the birds and the slow shutter speed. Here, though, we can see that the mother was now moving around the back of the tree a little more, keeping a distance from the fledgling to some degree. It was starting to try to taunt the youngster from the nest. The nest had, of course, been compromised. The snake knew where it was now and that the young were there, and who knows if he'd be back to try his luck again later. So the parents were edgy, and obviously the best thing to do was to get the young out of the nest and on their maiden flights and away. This is, by the way, I think my favorite shot from the day. I'm once again possibly personifying these birds, but I see a real sort of bond there, some affection in the eyes of the parent and the child as they seem to gaze into each other's eyes. I should probably mention here that we know that the parent, I keep calling this the mother, we know that this is actually the female and not the male, because the red crown only covers the back of the bird's head. The male of the species has a crown starting from around the same place at the back, but coming right forward over the brow and almost down to the beak. I obviously I'm not an expert on these birds. I know this because I've looked it up in one of my books when I got home. Having lost too many of the feeding shots, I changed my settings, going to ISO 800 and opening my aperture to fully now to 5.6, and that gave me a shutter speed of 1/80th of a second. Still slow for wildlife, but this was the conditions. I really didn't want to go any lower than 800 ISO either. Although it wasn't to be, I was hoping to have more of a chance of capturing the actual moment that the fledglings took flight. I used these settings, the ones that I just spoke of, for the next image that we're going to look at, which is 1486, in which we can see the mother had sort of flown into the canopy above, staying close to the tree though, still trying to coax the fledgling out of the nest. You can also see here that I was, what I was talking about earlier, the highlights here are totally blown out, and the bright summer sky is shining through the gaps in the leaves. I have a perfectly exposed bird, which I'm happy with, but I think that this is a little further than I'd really like to take, on the highlights blowing out. 3 minutes later at 1 p.m., we can see in image number 1487 that the mother is back down by the hole, but this time is staying even further around the tree trunk, really coaxing the fledgling out. And it is in this shot that we can now see that the fledgling is starting to heave itself out of the hole. As we can see now, the fledgling's red crown goes a little bit further forward than the mother. So I'm guessing that this is probably a male. But I might be wrong. The actual fully grown males comes much further forward than this. But I'm thinking that maybe this is as far as it goes for a youngster. In the next shot, number 1489, we can see the actual moment that the fledgling swings out of the nest and onto the side of the tree trunk. There's lots of subject movement here because I'm still shooting only at 1/80th of a second shutter speed. But in this case, I kind of like that, as it enhances the feeling of movement. I shot this before the start of the movement assignment, by the way, so this is not going to be my entry for that assignment. In image number 1490, a shot just a moment later, we can see that the fledgling has stabilized on the tree trunk and is getting its bearings. A moment after this, and it took flight. I tried to capture it, but I was being hit with buffer problems on my 5D. I'd been shooting like crazy as the fledgling left the nest, and with sort of an okay but slightly small buffer of 17 raw images, I was having to wait for my camera to get these images onto the memory card. And it was around this time that the new Canon EOS 1D Mark III, with its 10 frames per second and 30 consecutive frames in RAW mode, really started to sound a lot more important than the fact that it has less pixels than my 5D. Most of you that follow the forum will probably know that I'm holding out for a 1DS Mark III, or whatever it will be called, when it's released, that is. There's no announcements or anything right now, but the follow-up to the 1DS Mark II. That's the one that I'm holding out for, but currently, the 1D Mark III has really started to appeal to me, but there are a few things that we hear need to be sorted out, and I'm still really, really trying to resist the temptation of blowing my savings on this camera before waiting to see what the 1DS Mark III, or whatever it will be called, will hold for us. Anyway, the fledgling sat on a bough of a nearby tree for about 20 seconds, which I did shoot, although it wasn't a great shot, and then it flew away. I have to admit that I was pretty moved to see all of this whole drama with the snake and the one fledgling that got away, sort of escaped and then was taken away to save it from what might have happened had it been sort of left under the hydrangea bush. And then seeing the second fledgling was okay after the snake episode, and then watching it take its maiden flight, starting out on a new life. It was really nice, and the day itself was warm, bordering on hot, and many people, including me and my other half, sort of sat at picnic tables, ate snacks for lunch, and sort of chatting with each other and the other people that had shared the experience. I was pretty humbled to have turned up here only seriously trying to shoot these birds for one morning, and yet being able to witness not only the drama of the snake, but also see the fledgling take flight. And I felt lucky that I didn't decide to do some other chores on this day and put the visit off until the following day or even the following weekend. One guy that I'd become acquainted with, Mr. Takeuchi, did say at one point, he kind of looked at me and said, "Well, what do you think you're playing at, turning up for just a few hours and getting all of these great photo opportunities?" And of course he was just teasing, but it was true. I'd been very lucky. Some of the people around me, I heard in stories, had been there from morning until evening every day for the last 2 or 3 weeks. Not possible when you have to hold down a full-time job, of course, but I felt humbled all the same. It was while sitting eating lunch and having a joke with the others that one of the parents came back, the parents of the birds, came back to the nest. And I have to admit that, like most others, because most of them had already left, I'd actually forgotten about the third fledgling. There it was now, though, being fed by its parent. It had not been eaten by the snake. Well, we know that it hadn't been eaten by the snake because there was no bump when it came out. But it had not been killed by the snake. And I sort of started to grab my 100 to 400 millimeter lens that had already packed the 600 millimeter away. But by the time I stood up and got over to the nest, the parent flew away. I wasn't that bothered at all. I was happy and contented. I sat back down, had a chat for a while longer, and then took a steady drive home, thankful to the Japanese green woodpeckers that had made my day. One other thing that I got from this day that is something that I am really sadly lacking and hopefully am now at a starting point with, and that is that I have very few connections here in Japan to share information on what birds are where at any time and things like that. All of these people that I'd been shooting the Japanese green woodpeckers with had heard of this location through calling each other, blogs and things like that. And I got the contact details of a couple of photographers on this day and some great information on what else there is to shoot in the area and other locations around the country as well to a certain extent. I was reminded how important networking is and really hope to be able to expand on this moving forward, hopefully being able to give information as well as just take. I hope that you enjoyed this sort of virtual Saturday morning into the sort of early afternoon. Next week, possibly for a few weeks, I think, unless something else really exciting happens, over the weekend that is, I'm probably going to start discussing some single exposures. There are a number of images in my online gallery that I want to talk about for one reason or another, although they're really not part of a travelogue or a documentary style podcast like this. So I've made a list of these images and I'm probably going to start to talk about them next week. So stay tuned for some tips and techniques in those podcasts. Apart from that though, all that remains to be said is have a great week, whatever you have planned. Bye bye.
PhotocastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotocastNetwork.com.